Now, once again, here's Mark.
Mark forgot to fix something. And so Mark is still on the air, right? Okay. And Mark forgot to turn a knob. And so we all went to live, and there was no one there. And we're talking to him, and he's talking to us, but we can't hear one another. And it's, Vicky, it's all your fault. I just thought I'd let you know. Yeah, it's all Vicky's fault.
Thank you.
Craig, would you say that it's Vicky's fault? Just hang in there with me.
No.
Okay.
Because Vicky's sitting here.
Oh, that's exactly right. So I'm a little hot. Okay. I'm going to come down here, and I'm going to go here. And how about right there? Is that good? Okay. All right. Okay. I'll get better, Gil, as I get stupider and older. I'll get better. I promise. Anyway. Vicky Bell and Craig Bell here from Bell Automotive, 87th Street and McDowell about.
Yes.
Is that what you say to people? 86th, 87th?
87th Street. It's we're one block west of 101.
Okay.
In Scottsdale.
Okay. So, and this is actually a second generation auto repair that's been on our list for probably 20 years. So why don't you walk us from the start to today? Either one of you.
Well, yeah, so we started 74 as a Shell gas station.
Okay.
And
we, that's you, your mom, and your dad.
Yeah, me, my mom, and dad.
Okay.
Vicky hadn't showed up yet.
Okay. So.
I was 2 years later.
Oh, okay.
So, which we hired her as a gas station pump attendant.
Okay.
And then it changed my life from there. So.
It changed your life for good or bad? Which. I'm opening the door for you.
Yeah.
Here.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
No. So we stayed there until Shell decided they were leaving the state in 1980.
Okay.
And closed all their Shell stations and sold them to Circle K's and 7-Elevens.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went one block down the street and bought an old
Texaco
station. And we lost it.
No. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
And then we added three bays to that one. And we've been there ever since, 40.
Yeah, we did gas there for a while, then pulled out of that, and then and now it's just full service auto repair.
Okay. And the two of you have been there since?
Yeah.
Together?
Yes.
I've been there since I came back from school in 81.
81, 80.
Okay.
And then she was working.
I started at the self-service stations at the Shell station, okay. Self-service islands.
Okay.
And then,
so if you have a car question or a car problem, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, you're welcome to join us. And Gil, everything's still okay on your end? Okay, all right. Anyway, I've got a problem on my end that I'm just kind of making some adjustments. So, Gil, that's the reason why we're struggling on this side is because Mark didn't do what he was supposed to do before the show started. And that's because Vicky and Craig were talking to me and stuff, and they completely redirected all my attention. And, oh, you know what else I hadn't done? I hadn't turned my phone off. So if you guys have
that.
Not got it.
Got okay. That. Took care of it.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to give us a call. The car repair industry has changed a lot. Because you've been in it for 40 years.
Yes.
And likewise, we started in 79, so we've been in it for 40 years. Yeah. It's altogether different today than it ever has been before. So think about this. What's better than today than before? And then the second question is what's worse today than before?
Well, I think technology is a double-edged sword.
Okay.
It's very helpful for what we can now find out on cars.
Mm-hmm.
But the cars are also way more technology driven.
Okay.
And so you're really putting a lot of time into finding that technology and the problems with the technology other than back in the day.
And the machines to diagnose that technology.
Yeah. So back in the day when we did, you know, it was 5 minutes of diagnostic.
Okay.
And, you know, or, well, I mean, not five, but, you know, you had 15 minutes of, okay, we got a carburetor problem. We need to go delve into that.
Right.
You know, nowadays, if you look at a fuel injection system, which just took over for the carburetor, now you're like, okay, now it's a half hour, an hour to figure out that we have a fuel system problem, and it might be tied in with something else, so.
Okay. And I agree with you 100%. And you used the word diagnostic. And that's the word that dominates my life
yes.
with with people sending emails and stuff like that about what's it going to cost.
Right, right.
That's the most difficult part of our job today is, tell me the drivability concern. Better yet, let's do a more common one, the check engine light.
Mm-hmm.
The check engine light. So what kind of quote are you going to give over the telephone, or what are you going to say on the phone when someone calls up and they say, I have a check engine light on, how much is your diagnostic?
Right, so we're going to do, if I'm going to delve into anything other than plugging my scanner into your car, which I will do for free, that's just a code,
right.
And because some people, they have to know, you know. So, but usually we do an hour diagnostic.
Okay, we're going to talk dollars.
Dollars.
We're not going to talk hours.
Yeah. So okay. It would be $120.
Okay.
For that
okay.
hour, and if we can find something that's relatively simple and fixable in that hour, I'll throw that in.
Okay.
You know, some guys don't do that, but you know, if it's something, there's an obvious vacuum hose sitting there off. And I plug it in, and that fixes it, then I'm good with that. Or then we figure out, okay, now we need to take some stuff apart, and then how it's going to cost from there. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take the devil's side of your discussion. Fair enough?
Yes, fair.
Okay, and it's no problem. The diagnostic, you're exactly right. What the hell do you do when you query the computer and it has a low O2 voltage? Now, most people will replace the O2 sensor, but they don't understand the O2 sensor is just a reporter.
Right.
So it's saying, and low means lean.
Right.
And so that means I'm not seeing the fuel and air as I want to. I see way too much air and not enough fuel. But you can't really jump on that bandwagon and say, okay, this is going to be a half charge, because this could be a fuel filter that's plugged that's starving the engine of fuel.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you've given away a new fuel filter and the labor to install it, which actually is more money than the diagnostic that you just quoted for $125.
Yeah.
Those are the tough things, right?
Yes.
She gives me those funny looks because I'm sometimes too nice a guy.
you have no business on the front counter.
No. That's why I do a lot of work.
Stay in the back.
Yeah. But even to take that further.
Right.
Okay. They call you and they want to know a diagnostic on a lean O2 sensor. And there's the lean O2 sensor can be a vacuum leak. It can be a fuel starvation problem and anything in between.
All right.
It can be an EGR valve that's opened up, that's half open and half closed. It can be a mass airflow sensor that's got a crack in the bellows. Mm-hmm. It's got all of these different things, and our job is to find out, why is this engine saying I have too much air and not enough fuel? The first decision that has to be made is are we going after the air or are we going after the fuel? And the first thing that we've decided to do is take the fuel filter out, put it to our lips, and blow through the son of a okay? And it's really easy to determine if that fuel filter's plugged up. Here's the problem. You take it off, you blow through it, and it blows like a straw. Okay? That's good.
That's good.
Okay, put it right back in. It's still the labor of replacing the fuel filter, but we just didn't replace
it. Right, we didn't replace it.
But we don't have that other $50, $60, $70, $80 fuel filter cost associated with that.
Yeah.
But we still made progress.
Yeah.
And it's the knowledge to know where to find the problem. You know, it's
or which arm to take first. What's logical?
Yeah.
I think what drives me the craziest, it just wads my panties up something fierce, is when someone will call in, and it's typically a guy, and he's going to tell us what he wants us to do.
Yeah.
Okay, I have an O2 sensor code, and this is how much will it cost if you do this, 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 and this? And the answer is $4,252.95, because I don't want to do it. That is the recipe for disaster. When you let somebody dictate the repair procedure, I think my response to that person would be, and that doesn't happen but once a year, my response to that person is, I think what you really want is a gray-haired guy that's been around a while, that's probably an ASE master. He knows your car inside and out. So you pull it in, he looks at his scanner. Well, it's already been scanned by the kid at whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a real good guy to do. Why don't you give him your heart monitor and have him diagnose your bad valve in your heart? Yeah. So you got the kid there. The code just tells you that it's in the state of Oklahoma. You have to go find it.
It gives you the vicinity, but not the the location.
Yeah, and it's also telling you it's a guess from the computer. Because, like I said, you can have a low O2 sensor code, but you can have a high O2 sensor code, and both of those are two different things.
Yeah.
So you can't just say O2 sensor code and you go to this flow chart. But I think you'll both agree that in our industry, there's a lot of gray-haired guys, like two of us that are sitting here, that have a good handle on that kind of stuff. But it's not likely that I'm going to cut a brand new customer a whole bunch of slack if I luck out on this baby at the front side.
Right.
Yeah.
It's still a matter of scanning, checking fuel pressure, checking tailpipe emissions, and doing a little bit of unplug the vacuum line to the fuel pressure regulator to see if it's wet.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, there's certain. Yeah. There's so many things that we were just talking about. There's so many things I do just as a really quick. It might not even do anything to do with what we're dealing with.
Yes.
But I do a really quick test. Okay, pull this. Is it doing that? Nope. Plug it back in.
It's the knowledge.
Yeah.
It's the knowledge. It's the equipment and the facility to do all that in.
Yeah.
And the hard part is, now, I'm going to say this, and you don't have to do anything but shake your heads. If Grandma Moses come in, who's been a customer of ours since the 1916 Chevrolet she brought in, I'm going to extend courtesies to her that I wouldn't do to other people, right?
Yes, right.
Yes, that's just the way it is. Yeah. It could be neighbors, friends, family members, whatever. But actually, most of my family members pay more money because they're a bigger pain in the butt than all the rest of my customers. Thank God my mom and dad are dead and they didn't hear that. But the idea is it's just a difficult situation to deal with. But it's up to us to discount that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not for anybody else. I know you well enough to know that you're going to err on the side of the customer 75% of the time. And it may very well be it's a new customer and they don't get that exception. Or it's somebody who brought their car in, but then their boyfriend has called in 5 times and he wants to direct traffic and Vicky's dealing with it at the front counter.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So those kinds of things affect the repair of your car.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we're going to talk about something that just wads up my underwear, something fierce, and that's the idea of the flushing. It's just flush, 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 and all we hear is flush, flush, flush. I was told I needed to have my injectors flushed. I was told I needed to have my transmission flushed. I was told I needed this flushed, that flushed. And I, before we take a break, I'm going to spot you this. I think flushing is really a wallet flush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's for the customer. We're flushing money out of the customer's wallet. And then when we come back, it's what do we teach our customers to say when that happens to them? What is it that you say? What is it that you ask the guy in front of you or the lady in front of you? Why do I need this flush? What symptoms do I have? And how do you know I need this flush? And what are you going to fix?
Yes.
So those are the kinds of questions. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car repair issues. My car does this. This is what I was told I needed to do. And what we really like to do is you're welcome to call in 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Tell us your year, make, and model, how many miles, and then we're going to talk symptoms. Tell us what it does. Does it do it hot or cold? And we'll ask the questions, and then you give us answers. And then between Craig and I and Vicky, we've probably got 60 years at least. No, we got more than that.
Yes, because she's my new noise and smell technician.
Oh, okay. All right. So I know that I've got 40.
Yeah.
And how many you got?
40.
Oh, that's what we were just talking about, 45 plus.
Okay. All right. And then we've got Vic.
Yeah.
Vicky's time, too. So we got 100 years of experience here. And our experience transcends 55 Chevys to the newest and greatest and fanciest cars today.
Yes.
That in the major four brands that we talk about, fancy-dancy Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Honda, Toyota.
Those are
the
Teslas big five.
Yeah, Teslas are out. There are one, in my world, there are one percenter car. 1% of the people have them. I am not going to retool and send all my people to school for Teslas.
Yeah.
And here's what I'm going to say something that I know is going to get me in trouble, but I don't care. I have so many good friends that have Teslas.
Oh, yes.
But they are rabid about their defense of their purchase. And it gets just old really quick. Just leave it alone. If you don't want to tell people you have a Tesla, tell them you bought a new Camry. Who cares? Who cares? I have a retired policeman friend, two friends that actually have Teslas, and then the third retired policeman guy drives a big truck. And he hates Teslas. And I don't know why. And I've asked him and he doesn't have an answer. But the three of them are constantly battling. So it gets down to this. The guy that drives the big truck for a living says, God help you if I know you're in front of me and we're coming up to an intersection.
Well, your Tesla tells you that there's a big truck coming up behind you right now.
So those fun things happen. Yeah. But at the end of the day, there's plenty of work. And the one percenters out there, those cars that represent less than 1% of the market, are not the ones that Mark Salem is really going to be perfect on. It's the Chevy, the Ford, the Honda, the Toyota, and the Dodge. Yeah. Those are the big dogs right there.
Yes.
So that's really all you have to worry about. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about a couple of shops that are on the opposite ends of town that are shops that I'm very proud of. Kurtz Automotive is at I-17 in Bell. You've heard me talk about Kurtz. He's on the show quite a few times this last year, and they do a great job, and they are very, very honest. So if you're anywhere near the I-17 and Bell Road, the northeast corner, Kurtz Automotive is a place I can promise you that you'll be treated fairly, and they know what they're doing. On the other side, there's only one shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you. That's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been around since 1970, but that's just Thompson's Auto Repair. The parents, just like your parents, the parents of the people who run Thompson's Auto Repair, which is Brian and Thelma, they've been in the business, in the gas station business, since the 60s. So the family has really been in the business for 40 plus 20 is 60 years, very much like your family.
Yeah.
And we talk about the Thompsons and the Vivians when we talk about Mesa.
Right, okay.
And this is the marriage of a Thompson and a Vivian.
Yeah,
so okay. When you talk about that, then. But it's the only shop that can pass the muster from Mark Salem's point of view in Mesa. I wish I had five shops in Mesa I could refer you to, but I just don't. So we get into the diagnosis, and we're usually going to give them, for me, and I know it's true for you, and I know it's true for Vic, we give them kind of a high number on the diagnosis so we can come in under the number and be a hero.
Correct.
Right? Yes. It's not that we're going to keep the money. It's that we're going to – but we also don't have to call if we need another third of an hour or a half an hour.
Yeah.
So the number kind of separates the men from the boys or any other variable of that. But it's just a matter of, okay, if – it's a really bad thing to have me hear someone on the phone tell me how to fix it based on what the guy at AutoZone said.
Yes.
Or O'Reilly's or any of the rest of them. That just drives me crazy. Because if those kids were really good at fixing cars, they'd be working for me for $50,000 to $100,000 a year. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
So if they were ASE masters like I am, and I've been a master since 1981... You have ASC certifications.
Yes.
Okay. So when you talk about those guys look in a book, and it would be nice if they said, 9 out of 10 people that come in with this code on your car bought this. But the problem is that doesn't show success.
Well, that's a problem because, you know, when they come in from that parts place that gave you this little flyer for that code, There's one that bothers me the most is the 171-174 lean code, And it gives all their little symptoms with the O2 sensor and all that. They leave out vacuum leak. One of the biggest things that would make that code come out, and it's not on that piece of paper.
Absolutely, and I'll give you an example of that. Folks, we use engine vacuum. The engine on the top part of a V8 engine, let's do a V8 or a 4-cylinder or whatever, the intake manifold has vacuum in it. So it's like a big vacuum cleaner. It's literally a big vacuum cleaner. We use the vacuum as we open up valves. The cylinder sucks the fuel-air mixture into itself. So that's what vacuum is all about. We use vacuum to set your cruise control and to cancel your cruise control. We use vacuum to move your air conditioning from high vent, middle vent, to low vent. We use vacuum to cruise to do your cruise control. What else?
Evaporative emissions.
Okay.
It's a big, big deal with evaporative emissions.
We use vacuum to open and close valves as we suck the fumes off your fuel tank and burn them through the engine.
So we have that nice clean air in Phoenix.
Exactly. So when you look at all that stuff there, you say to yourself, vacuum is the very first place I'm going to look. Now, if you open a hood on a car and you're going to go look for a vacuum leak, how long will it take you to typically find it if it's there?
Well, it depends. Again, we're talking, I work on a myriad of cars. So okay. If I had to look at an old Ford truck, it's going to take me much longer because they have a lot of vacuum hoses.
Yeah, and you're talking, what's that DuraSpark 5 or something
yes.
like that? No, you're right. Those Ford trucks and cars yeah. that had 4 miles of vacuum line underneath the hood. The idea is that sometimes we can hear it.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes
I get
hiss.
My little stethoscope out and right. I'm finding leaks with a stethoscope
exactly.
because it's easier to hear that little hiss, you know.
Right.
So
those are the kinds of tricks that we know, but his piece of paper doesn't have vacuum leak on it, but he'll have you replace a whole bunch
sensor.
Of and map sensors yeah. and this and that and EGR in case it's holding it open yeah. and destroying yeah. your vacuum. So they do all of this work kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, it's a vacuum leak. Now, I know that you've enjoyed what I'm about to describe, but isn't it really kind of cool that every once in a while you open up the hood to maybe a new customer uh-huh. or even maybe an old customer with a well-meaning child. Mm-hmm. You open up the hood and they've got a code and you recognize it as a vacuum code. And they're talking to you and you're looking and you go, okay, well, hang on just a minute. I'm gonna fix it for you right now. And you just plug in the vacuum line that goes to the back of the manifold.
Yeah.
And you say that should take care of it. And you shut the hood and say, this one's on the house. And you
yeah.
slap them on the shoulder and walk away. That happens at least once a month in my shop. That kind of stuff. But I'm not going to take someone who's just driving by and run them out there and do that for them. It's going to be Mrs. Moses who's done business with us for 30 or 40
yes.
years.
Yeah.
That's going to get, we're going to give them the first real quick look. Yeah. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 9 minutes after the hour. Actually, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I'll get it straight. I'll get my stuff together sooner or later. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. I've known Tom since 1983. After you've known somebody, as long as I've known Tom, you really do know if he's honest, if he's dependable, if he knows what he's talking about. Because when you get in an environment, Craig, like we have, where we got 10 or 12 shop owners in a table, it doesn't take long to figure out who knows what they're doing and who doesn't know what they're doing. And it's usually the new guy that's struggling.
Right.
It's the older guys that have already been there, done that. But nevertheless, Tom's been around a very long time. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. So if you're in the vicinity of I-17 and Deer Valley Road, he's on the northwest corner of I-17 and Deer Valley, and you don't have an auto repair shop, may I suggest, as I do on all the shops that I refer you to, is stop by for an oil change or call for an oil change and see how you're treated. Speaking of oil changes, what I'm seeing a lot right now is, and I'm seeing this, it's brought to my attention by owners of vehicles, other shop owners, some of the oil vendors, and then there's some criminal activity where we tell them something that's not true. And one of the things that we're seeing let me ask you this, what's your synthetic oil change interval?
I do 5 to 6.
Okay, on the synthetic oil.
On the synthetic oil.
Okay, and is the cars that you're working on, what kind of a year spread are you? Are you in the 70s, 80s, 90s? Are you pre-2000 or north of 2000?
Well, most of our cars, I mean, I go from 50s to...
We have a 59 El Camino. And
yeah,
we
so
have...
we go all the way around. So yeah, so a lot of my newer cars, and that's what I've been running into problems lately is... A lot of my older customers are buying newer cars.
Uh-huh.
And this is a lady that doesn't drive 3,000 miles in a year.
Right.
And now she has a synthetic car.
that's got a 12 to 15,000 mile call on the oil change.
Yeah.
So what are you
going to
do?
And she's all worried. She keeps coming in every 3,000 going, I need to get my oil change. And we're trying to explain, no, you do not need to get your oil change. We'll check the fluids now for, and I've sort of been doing that lately is some of my older customers that have newer cars, I'm bringing them in
once
at 3,000
well,
and we're doing a little easy safety check and sending them back out without changing the oil because it's just.
That is a big problem.
Yeah.
That is a big problem. The big problem is that we have older customers, and we're right across the street from Ahwatukee and Mountain Park Ranch and stuff like that, that have 3 to 5,000 mile oil change intervals. And that's all they're going to do.
Yeah.
So if you put a synthetic in there that goes 15,000 miles, what do you do?
Yeah.
Well, you call them in at the end of a year because that's what needs to be done.
Yeah.
You can also back them up to a semi-synthetic or even a conventional from 3 to 5,000, and you can put them in that and save them some money. But what we're seeing is we're seeing shops purposely put 3,000 mile oil changes on cars that have averaged 20,000 miles a year. So why are you putting synthetic oil in your car, or why are they putting synthetic oil in their car, but they're calling it back at 3,000 miles when your light's going to come on and tell you you're due for an oil change between 10 and 12 and 15.
Yeah.
So how are you explaining that to your customer?
It's been a challenge. Like I said, I just had a lady in just yesterday. She was synthetic, full synthetic oil change. And we were trying to explain that, you know, well, we'll see you in a year. And she had that puzzled face. Mm-hmm. And I said, this with the new synthetic oil, we don't have to change our oil. And she said, well, can I come in and get, you know, checked? And I said, yes, that's perfect. We're going to put like 6 months down. And in 6 months, you come back and we'll check all your tires and all your fluids.
But it had been 2 years since
she'd been in. 2 years since she'd been in. So.
And we didn't get to do a safety check in that time. So, you know, I explained the importance of that.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is they're going to go out and do 10 to 15,000 miles and they think everything's going to be okay. Hypothetically, it should be okay.
Right.
But it's really a good idea to have somebody check the fluids, the belts, the hoses, and the tires in the interim because we never did that before. We did it every 3,000 miles, but now all of a sudden you're asking us to look into the future 10 to 15,000 miles ahead and tell them it's okay. It's okay. It's difficult.
Yeah.
And it's difficult for them.
And then I had another lady in we've been having a dealing with, and this is a Subaru issue, is they burn oil naturally.
Yeah. Yep.
So you got a 15,000 mile oil change. There's no oil left at 15,000 miles.
Well,
she's coming in every 3 weeks to have her oil check just because it burns so much.
And you're right. The other day, Eddie said, I'm going to start disconnecting the oil pressure switch to make sure the light still works, or grounding the lead to it to make sure, because that will tell them. And then it's a matter of you can drive it in until you get the red light. But when you get that red light, you got to come right in. That right then, right there, right now.
Yeah.
But this creates all kinds of things like you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's certainly the olders. Now, then you have other ones that want a conventional oil, but the oil light's going to come on in the car at 10,000 miles, but they want conventional oil, which has a 3,000-mile life. What do you do then?
They come in with the black oil.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that we're between a rock and a hard spot because we have all these moving targets. The target is which oil of three.
Right.
Then each one of them has a different oil change interval. Then the third part of it is what is the car programmed to turn on that light?
Yes.
And you have to work through that.
Yes, yeah.
And unfortunately, we can't just take and put a band-aid over the light anymore.
No.
Or take the bulb out of it. We can't do that anymore. That's what we did in the 80s.
Well, I was
the electrical tape.
We were just talking about that the other day. Is, you know, in the old days, when you had a temperature problem, you always had the light would come on and scare you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Some of the manufacturers have taken that light out.
Right.
So they're relying on the person to look at that gauge and know where that gauge should be instead of putting a light there going, you're in trouble.
Yeah, or flashing the light or audibly talking to the driver.
Buzzing their seat or something.
But I can tell you this much. On the newer model cars, I was told the other day by somebody from Chevrolet, we're going to shut them down.
Okay, well,
all right.
That's it.
We're going to literally shut off the fuel supply. We're going to somehow or another try to make or help them not destroy the engine.
That's a good idea.
Limp mode.
Yeah, or go into limp mode. And limp mode means basically you can do, what, 10, 15 miles an hour, but that's it. It'll still go, but The computer's going to shut off your air conditioning. It's going to turn on your cooling fans. It's going to do a bunch of different things in, to help you get in limp mode.
To the shop.
Somewhere.
And in Arizona, turning your air off is one of the big things that brings them into the shop all the time.
Yeah, they
might be overheating, but my air's not working.
And like you said, they're overheating, but the air's not working. That's the issue. Or the tires are bald and the brakes are metal to metal.
But my air's not working.
But fix the air first. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. If you have a car question or a car problem, or if you have a car dilemma, or if you and your wife have an argument about a particular aspect of the car, then give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'll turn the speakers off, and that way that Gil will say, I hear an echo, and I just shut it off, Gil. So I'm having a tough time today. You know what's going on right now is Renee and the kids have a garage sale at the house that we sold. And so I stopped by there this morning, and it was utter chaos. And so I was thinking, I really wish I would have been there instead of here. But that's okay. That's okay. I enjoy this. 602-508-0960. How many of your customers do you think understand the difference between normal and max air?
Oh, I just had to explain to a lady yesterday.
2%.
The biggest one I have is with all the new automatic airs.
Uh-huh.
People like to turn it like what they have at the house. So I'm going to run my air at 79 on my car, and then they'll come in and they go, my air's just not quite cold enough. And I said, crank that baby down to 60, and it will be cold enough.
And go back up until you find your happy spot.
Yes, yeah, yes.
But your house is quite large. It's a gymnasium compared to your car.
Right, and your car will get 140 sitting in the parking lot, and if you leave it on 79 and you want to come out and cool that 140 down to 79, it's going to take a while.
Take it down to 60.
Just take it down to 60.
The recirculatory is like your house.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're just taking inside air, cooling it off, and putting it right back into the house.
Right.
Outside air or normal is like a swamp cooler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have to have a window down. Mm-hmm. We have, especially older guys, they'll argue with you about normal. And my explanation is it's like a swamp cooler. In order for normal to work, we have to bring outside air in, and we have to. It's like a swamp cooler. You're not going to have anything if you block off the air coming in. But on recirculatory or maximum, it's like your house where we're recirculating it within. So we're sucking air out of the hallway, in the hallway, cooling it off and putting it back into the house. Well, a swamp cooler will have outside air creates cold, and then we blow the cold in.
We have a joke between the two of us because. We used to go to Tucson a lot because my daughter was living down there. And there's always a dump on the one side of the, as you come into town.
A stinky spot.
Yeah, there's a stinky spot.
And I always blame him.
When you're on outside air, there's a look over at you as you're driving going, why are you stinky? And then I have to look at over and I'm like, we're on outside air. Let me turn it on inside air.
Okay, now I gotta explain it for them, okay? When you're on outside air, you are sucking air from the outside, you're cooling it off, and you're putting it into the passenger compartment. When you go by a dump.
Pasture.
Or a pasture, and it smells like crap, then that's going to be aspirated into the car, okay? It works the other way around, too.
Yes.
All right, okay. It's one of those things where I remember, this guy that brought me up in cars in 1966 and 68, his name was Ken. And what he would do is he would exhaust the air inside the car that was contaminated with something he just gave the inside of the car, but he'd drop the window next to me. Okay.
So as this
fart left the car,
it's passing by
my face because the window is now down where I'm sitting.
So if you're mad at your wife, put her window down.
Oh gosh. You guys remember the old days and the old gas station days, like your father.
Yes.
And Whitey and Jim and Harry and God only knows in Scottsdale, all the old gas station guys, Bill.
Yeah.
All of those guys, they were ornery.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they were ornery.
They were as ornery as a bunch of farmers.
My dad and Jim Winters go to lunch, not as much as they used to, but they see each other, and they're the two older ones that I see. Most of the other guys are out, doing you know, retirement thing, stuff, but Jim's still around, and so they go out and have lunch.
And Jim was well known for making sure the customer understood that they were wrong, as well as right, as well as right. You got to give him credit.
Oh yeah.
And Jim was he's a very tall man, and he's a very intimidating man.
Yes.
But he was also had been in the business since Jesus was a baby. He's been in the gas station business. Your father was Snow White.
Yeah.
Jack the Ripper was his wife.
Still is.
And still is. So your dad was the guy that was really nice.
Yeah, my dad was the mediator between Jim and maybe Whitey or Harry or whoever at the time.
Yep.
You know, and so he would be that middle guy that, okay, you guys are, no, you need to calm down. Oh, no, and it's back and forth. So that was my dad's role back in those days.
And we're not going to mention your mother by name, but we are going to mention that if you were going to, catch fire with someone at the front office, it wasn't going to be with your dad. It was going to be with your mother. and it was probably because the customer was asking for something that she just found completely inappropriate. You know, oh, I did authorize $300 worth of work, but I'm a little short on money. Can I pay you at $10 a week? Now your dad would say,
yeah.
Excuse me, come here for a
minute.
Make
that five.
Yeah, exactly. Your dad would pass it to your mother. But that's the way it always was.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably stole it from somebody else, but Jack the Ripper, Snow White kind of syndrome. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that.
Okay.
Everybody knows that if you're going to get called into Mark's office, you're getting your ass chewed. That's all there is to it. You know, you ain't coming in for a hug.
Yeah.
But if you get called into Renee's office, then it's one of those things that you're probably going to get a raise, you're going to get an attaboy, you're going to get something.
Okay.
Okay, who's saying?
Oh, this is my my daughter's texting me at the time. She's she's listening. She just moved back from Maine last year. We moved her back,
thankfully.
Middle of COVID,
cross
country. So she's now a librarian at Glendale Community College and loving it. So
living in the Central Corridor.
Yeah, and is she a car girl? I mean, to some extent,
she knows a lot.
She knows a lot. She knows. Okay. She just called me about a car question last night.
Okay.
She got home from we'd went out for dinner, and she goes, "Dad, the middle dome light's on, and it won't go out when I shut the door." And I said, "Well, push the lens, because that's usually the switch is in the lens." Mm-hmm. And she said, "I tried that already." She's already tried several things that she knew that I've already taught her over the years, mm-hmm. and said it didn't work. So I said, "Well, we tried the door, closing the door." And I said, "Well, I think we might have a short in that light, you know." And I said, "Let's try one other thing." And she had already figured it out before I said it. She banged it a few times and it went out.
Yes. Yeah. How many times have you fixed something with your fist?
Yes.
And it's a great diagnostic tool.
Oh,
you know
what
I mean?
Oh, I drive down the road. If you have a dash issue, you bang on the top of the dash, and if it all comes back up, you know we're in the dash.
Or that noise that was under the dash a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a fix.
No.
It's just
gives
step
you an
one
area of
that's
the,
right.
Yeah,
step one. And then what do you do when you do hit the dash and the noise goes away, and you can't get it to happen again? And then so what we do is we put it like a little piece of paper that says POW, and we tape it to the area of the dash, and we said, "We need you to help us with this." but the idea is that does happen all the time.
Oh yeah, this was a perfect example of Vicky's new job as the noise and the smell person.
Uh-huh.
We had a lady that just brought a car. It was a used car, and it was a used by a salesman or whatever. And so she brought in with a noise, and of course I go out drive it. I don't hear the noise. She gives me pretty specific where it's happening. I don't hear it, so I give it to one of my other guys. He drives it. We don't hear it. And so we give it back to her and said, if it starts getting worse, and it's a fairly new car. It's got 40,000 miles on it. And we're like, in our heads as a technician, we're like, it's got 40. There's not a lot of things that can break or wore out yet that are going to be causing this noise. So she brings it back after a trip to Tucson, and she goes, "Oh, it was just driving me crazy the whole way." So I get in it again. I don't hear the noise again.
Yeah.
So we give it to Vicky, and literally goes around the block, comes back in, has taken a phone and taken a capture of the noise where she thinks it's coming from in the dash.
Okay.
And we look at it, and we actually hear the little noise. So it's like, okay. So she gets under there and feels something. She says, "I think I feel something under there." Vicky does. And then so my technician gets under there and looks, and they had put
tracking device
on the ALD connector for the computer.
Okay.
And it was banging as she drove.
Swinging and banging.
And so we pulled that off, and everybody was happy.
Pulled it off and said, I can use some of these
parts. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, heck, yes. And which one of your boyfriends put this tracking device on your car? And then you can say, your dad.
Yeah. Now, that's what we figured out. It was probably a corporate car, uh-huh. and they wanted to watch where their salesman or whoever was out and about. So
absolutely.
We get that a lot nowadays. So.
And that's the tough part is noises. Noises. Yeah. We really need the customer. It's a real simple conversation as far as I'm concerned. You need to learn how to make this happen.
Right.
And then that's it. And we got a caller. Gil, who might that be?
Say hello to Greg.
Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
How can I help you?
2008 Suburban drinking brake fluid. It's not leaking anyplace. Can't see where it's going. Brakes are working, but it just keeps drinking fluid, probably half a bottle every 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. All right. So there's a two-part reservoir. Is it the front reservoir, the rear reservoir, or when you add fluid?
The larger of the two.
Okay. So that's the front brakes. Okay?
Yes.
And the only other place I can think of is if you're not leaking off the calipers, which would leak brake fluid onto the wheels, and you would see the stains of the brake fluid on the wheel as the wheel spins real fast, you'd see lines that started at the center of the wheel and went outward. Mm-hmm. You need to check the inside of the tire as well on both fronts to make sure that there's not any brake fluid on the inside. The only other place that I can think of would be the booster.
Brake booster, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the brake booster, what you do then is you can leave the lines on the master cylinder, take the two bolts that hold the brake master cylinder to the booster. Are you with me so far?
Okay.
And then you're just going to slide the booster out about 2 inches. Now, the lines are going to move with you, and just don't kink any of the lines.
Yeah, won't be problems. But.
Yeah. And then look at the back of the master cylinder, and because there's going to be a rod that goes into the back of the master cylinder into a puck that looks about the size of a quarter, mm-hmm. and it has a concave area in it. If that's all wet, then your booster is full of brake fluid, and you need to replace the booster and the master.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're going to give you an estimate. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go. Shoot from the hip. Either one.
Oh, that's all across the board. It depends on. Oh, on a Suburban, I guess that's not too bad.
Okay.
So I don't know, $300-$400
for the part.
Part, yeah.
Yeah, for the part. Then you got installed. Then you got bleeding, and then you got brake fluid. So I was in the $500 to $600 range, just guessing.
Yeah.
Just guessing. Yeah. But if you've done work before like this, you'll be fine. Here's where you're likely to get into trouble. When you put the new master on. Getting it to bleed properly is going to be really tough. We usually put it in a vise and bleed it, and we have specific tubing that we use where we push fluid in and suck fluid out. And you can't do that unless you have this setup. So you could do the booster and master yourself. I would bench bleed the master before I put it on.
Yes,
that's what I do. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but. Getting the air out of the line, you're saying would that still be all four wheels, right? Would have to be bled?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so what about the air that is between the booster and all the line going back to the rear wheels?
No, there's not going to be any air in the booster. There's not going to be, the master cylinder's defective and it's pouring brake fluid into the booster. We got to replace the booster. But the new master cylinder bolts to the booster and the bleeding procedure is no different than if you would have just opened the system and put it back together. Okay? Okay, got to run. But thank you very much for calling, Greg. We have open line 602-508-0960. We're going to be back for another hour of fun and car frivolity. I can't spell it, but I can hardly say it. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and Vicki Bell and Craig Bell, owners of Bell Automotive at 87th, almost Pima Road, almost the 101 in McDowell in Scottsdale on the north side of the road. It's been there since Columbus Day. It was there actually before Columbus was even around.
Actually, I've got pictures. A gentleman came in when he used to own the Texaco station. It was built in 1958.
Uh-huh.
And it's got the old
Corvair sitting in front of it.
Yeah, old Corvair sitting out in front of the shop. So I've hung those up, and over the years, so many people come in there and just look at, oh, I remember the old Texaco and talk about green stamps and we talk about all kinds of giveaway stuff. And
those were the days. Those were the good days, actually. Those were the good days. Anyway, I'm going to tell you about a couple of shops and we'll start in Avondale. S&S Tire is in Avondale. They do really good work. It's young men who took over for their mother and their father. They really learned well, as most of us did, because you're a second generation and I'm a second generation. So we learned from the good guys, our parents, and we learned how to fix cars. And S&S Tire is certainly one of those that can do that. Now, they have three locations in the West Valley, but here's what's good about them, too. They're not too proud to say, we're not the best person for this repair. And that's kind of impressive because not too many people, there's not too many gray-haired guys out there that can say that. It's kind of like an old guy saying, I'm sorry, I burnt your car to the ground. It's really a matter of, is S&S, they do what they do, but even though they're S&S Tire, they do oil changes and cooling system flushes and all the maintenance stuff, so S&S Tire would be the place. In addition to that, Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted facility, as far as I'm concerned. I've known Chuck and his family since 1982. I know that they're honest, they're dependable, their technicians, their staff, their mechanics are not paid a commission, so therefore they don't sell unnecessary parts or repairs, or they're not tempted to sell unnecessary parts and repairs. So if you're looking for a great shop in the Sun City area, I'd like to recommend Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand and 99th Avenue. 99th Avenue and Grand on the northwest corner. Let's go to the phones. Corky, you're up first. How can I help you?
Yes, I got a question for you, Mark.
Okay.
I have on tire wear. I purchased a set of tires from one of the dealers in town that wasn't discount.
Okay.
And 60,000 mile warranty at 19,500 on 3/32 from the wear bar. And the guy, you know, I taken it back to his dealership to have it rotated every 6,000 or 7,000 miles with oil changes. And he said, well, I said, this, what's wrong? He said, well, I don't know. You know, and I'm saying, what's wrong with these people? Why are they selling a 60,000 mile tire and only goes 23,000?
Okay, all right. Let me give you the good news and the bad news, okay? The good news is that they're going to prorate the tire and you're going to get a big credit on the purchase of a new tire. But I think your credit's going to be less than half. I'm guessing because so at a 60,000 mile tire, you have around what, 30?
20.
20, okay. So you're going to get about a two-thirds credit, and you're going to pay about one-third or for new tires. I don't want to know the brand, but I would think that this mileage would suggest that it's a performance car or performance vehicle, and the tires are kind of soft and sticky, and they don't typically get 40, 50, 60,000 miles out of it. Am I close?
No, it's a pickup truck. I'm an old guy like you, so.
Okay. I know, but okay, all right. So at 20,000 miles, do we have even wear on all four tires, except maybe the front's a little bit of outside edge wear, which is normal?
Nope. Everything is about the same. Like I said, I've had them rotated and balanced every time I got the oil changed there.
How much was four tires? How much were the four tires?
It was right around $680.
Okay. So, Vicky, help me with my math. He probably would pay about $200 for another set of tires because he was denied two-thirds of the mileage.
He paid almost $800.
Yeah. So that's how most of us would do that. And I would – do you guys have favorite tires or brands that you get along with really well? Or
old days.
My Jeep, I have –
You got Toyos
on
them?
Because
they are very quiet, very quiet.
All right, I don't like road noise.
All right, well, I didn't, so that everybody understands, I didn't prod you to say that. Okay?
No.
We sell Toyos.
Oh, okay.
And everything we own. I tell people, go out in the parking lot, and all the
Jeep.
My daughter, my wife, my son, his wife, me, everything we own, all of our vans, all of our shuttles are all have Toyos on it. Mm-hmm. That should tell you something.
Okay.
So we're real happy with that. Perhaps they can give you that $200. Actually, it's more than that. If it's a $500 or $600 bill, you've got a $400 credit.
Yeah.
So you have to pay. You have to pay for what you got. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And so I would start there and see what they say and try to negotiate something like that. But Michelin's a good tire. Toyo's a good tire. Bridgestone's a good tire. All of those. It's just really a matter of personal preference. And actually, the rep is the tie for us for Toyo just because of the service level that they provide. Mm. And the tie typically goes to the customer and not to me, and he makes that happen. So,
I think. I'm thinking they may want to give me the same brand tire as a rebate. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just give me, you know, the money back and buy another set of tires there. So,
well, and know, are we outside edging the fronts at all? And what I'm asking you that for is this an in-city 100% of the time vehicle, or does it, does 25, 30, 40% of the time it's going straight?
Most of the time, you know, I have a repair business, home repair business, so I'm all over the place. You know, everywhere, you name it. I'm gone here, there, and everywhere. So I know, and the guy said he would work with me on this. I'm saying, oh, okay, well, work with me, you know, I haven't pressed it. But that's the first question I have for you, and I'm thinking that's what they're going to do. The next question I have for you is I recently purchased a new used vehicle, a 2000 Lexus.
Okay.
Make the long story short, this is just for information for me. They sent me the paperwork to look at all, to tell me what was on the vehicle via an email, and I had already driven the car, and I said, yes, I'd like to buy it. Send me the information. They did. I went down and bought the vehicle. Then I started looking for the parts that wasn't, that weren't part of what they sent me, like the heated and ventilated seats. And I don't know, and the sunroof wasn't there. And not that I care, but doesn't it seem like they have to stand up to that, what they sent me, the car had on it? And
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, but I can tell you that if you have the paperwork that describes what you're talking about, and this is the vehicle they represented, and this is the day they sent it, and this is the day I bought it, and this is the day my check cleared, and da-da-da, and you have that timeline, you know, all written down, then the answer to your question is that would be certainly good enough to ask them to unwind the whole deal. Give me my money back and unwind the whole thing, because basically what I got is not what you represented I got. Now, if you want to play hardball, you find an attorney and he helps you. But if you really want to play hardball, then you can go to the Attorney General's office and file a fraud complaint.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good information to know.
Yeah. As long as you have paperwork, you have to have paperwork to support it. It can't be he said, she said. Okay. That's what I picked up on that. So, all righty. Well, good luck to you, Corky. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. Those are two questions I don't think I've had in two or 3 years. All righty. Let's go to Catherine. Catherine, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Are you talking about Kathleen?
I'm sorry, Kathleen. Yes, I am, because I didn't write it down correctly. Gil represented it correctly, and Vicky is slapping me right now. But, yes, ma'am, you're up.
Yes, hi, thank you. Okay, so I drive a 2018 Mitsubishi Outlander Sport.
Okay.
And it's low mileage. It's 21,820 miles. I was sitting at a red light the other day, and somebody ran into me, the rear end.
Okay.
They weren't going that fast. It was like they were stopped, and then they started before the light turned green.
Okay.
So anyway, it wasn't bad, you know, like the bumper just got a little scratch and a couple little dents on the, you know, the hatchback. But,
right.
It's been making kind of a weird little rattle now in the back, underneath.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what it could be?
No,
never
but
did that before.
You haven't had it fixed yet, right?
No.
Okay. So you're going to pick the repair shop, and you're going to take the car there, and you're going to say, this is the insurance company you'll be dealing with, which is the other drivers.
Right.
And you don't have any permission to spend any of my money until you call me first. And so what they'll do is they'll put the insurance company on notice. The adjuster will come over. The shop and the adjuster will sit there and get together. They know that they've probably broken an exhaust bracket or something like that. And so the two of them will crawl underneath it. They'll get their estimates. The insurance company is making sure that he's getting an expensive job as cheap as he possibly can. The shop is just trying to get the car fixed and get the happy customer out of here. And the shop, unfortunately, is charged with the responsibility of representing you, which is no problem for most of us. We don't have any problem representing our customer. So don't worry about this. It's going to be part of what's going on next. And, of course, the other insurance company may say to you, he didn't have rental coverage. And you say, I don't care what he had. You're going to put me in. Please put me in a rental because that's what's fair. Or I can call the hawk, the beaver, or the snapper and have him call you and tell you that my neck hurts.
Yeah.
And you can play that silly, stupid game. So that's what I tell you.
Alrighty. Okay, so I just moved here. How do I find a reputable repair guy?
What part of town do you live in?
I live in Tempe by the university.
Okay. Boy. I think because you're an 18 Mitsubishi, I think you go back to the dealer. And that's the one probably up there in off the 202 in Mesa.
Okay.
I think you're best served there. There's some things going on in my empty head right now. I want you to read between the lines. I'm from Tempe. I was born and raised in southern Arizona, but I went to high school in Tempe back in the 60s. and I do know lots of really good shops, but unfortunately, I don't have a body read between the lines. I don't have a body shop I can send you. And you need to have this person step up and be able to financially fix something if they mess it up. And I think that dealer would be better, you would be better served under those conditions.
Okay, very good.
All righty.
So
okay. And Catherine, thank you very much. Joe, you stay right there because we're going to be back right after this. Minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. With us today is Vicki and Craig Bell from Bell Automotive, 87th Street in Scottsdale, and McDowell, which is the 101, been around since Jesus was a baby, and both of them have grease on their fingernails, and it's either grease underneath Vicky's fingernails or blood from Craig being an idiot. I don't really know which one it is. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is just that. Nate at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair knows diesels. Now, he's not going to fix your car over the phone. He's not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to call him and explain your stuff to you. But when he has it in front of him, Nate is the most awesome diesel guy I've ever met in my life. He is a lot better than I am. So I'm proud to tell you that Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a great place. He's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's been around the block. He's been in business quite a few years, and he's a good guy. So Strictly Diesel. Let's go to Joe. Joe, good morning. Thank you for holding.
Sure. Yes, my wife has a 2008 Toyota Sienna, and it has 150,000 miles in it. And recently, the past few days, it seems like one day it's going to be, the air conditioner is going to be cooling, and then, the next day it doesn't cool, or, it goes, in stages.
Okay, let me make a suggestion to you. You've given us good clues, okay? You've given us good clues, but I want you to run it on maximum cold for a couple of days, and if you say to us that when I put it on maximum cold and I ask for 35 degree air, it gives me that all day long. Craig, does that help you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So if you want to save some money, go to as cold can be. If it gets too cold, roll your window down. I mean, it'll be okay. Yeah. But this is a diagnostic procedure. More than likely, it's going to be a Freon level issue. Mm-hmm. And Vicki, if they bring it in and you're going to pull out all the refrigerant that they have, measure it, clean it, process it, and let's pretend it's 15 ounces and it holds 20. So you have a process that goes through that and yeah. takes theirs and clean them up. Approximately, give me the goalpost on what that costs. Craig.
100, 120, 150.
And it's because we don't know how much short they are.
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
There's a wild card in there because if it holds 15 and they got 10,
right.
then we have to put five in. But we're going to take their 10 out, clean it up,
clean it
put
up.
It back inside, and then sell you five more.
Well, yeah. and that's the thing is the Freon actually has to be taken out of the car, run through the filters, the cleaners. We can't just put it back in the car without cleaning it.
Right.
And the cars are holding such small amounts of Freon anymore. If you're two thirds available, if it only holds 6 ounces and you're 2 ounces down,
it's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And this is something that's good because you're going to pay for the process, but you're going to get your old Freon back, and that's expensive. And so there's going to be a real value here but I'm not willing to just add 3 ounces to it and let's try it. We're not doing that anymore.
With
new sophisticated equipment, we suck it out, it weighs it, and it cleans it. It takes the metal particles out of it, it takes the moisture out of it, it takes the oil out of it, it cleans up the refrigerant you had. I put 10 in, I add 5 more, and boom, I'm throwing my ice cubes out of the vents.
And that's literally about a 1 hour process on the machine. It's not a fast procedure.
He might want to look at, different temperatures during the day, like we were talking. Morning, it might be fairly cold, but afternoon, it might not be as cold as they'd like.
You're parking in the sun, you're parking in the shade.
Okay, but let's add on to that. It could be that it warms up at a traffic light and it doesn't when he goes. That's a fan. That's an air.
That's
a blower. So there's all these moving parts, but clearly, because it's an 08, and God knows how much refrigerant it has in it. That's the place to start. That's the place to start. So anyway, that's my advice to you is find somebody who's going to take your car, pull the Freon, measure it, weigh it, clean it, put it back in, add the deficient amount, the other 3 ounces you need, 5 ounces you need, and tell you, I am 99% sure that this is going to take care of your problem. And we think that that's going to be between 120 and 150, 160 will be your total price. And we can't tell you any better than that because we don't know how low you are on the refrigerant. So, Joe, good luck to you, buddy. Tom, you're up next. Tom, how can I help you?
Yeah, good morning. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Question on power chips for gasoline engines. I know you guys work on diesels, and I think they're somewhat of a different animal. I was looking to see if it's worthwhile to buy a power chip for a gasoline engine. And
that's you.
Obviously, according to them, it's going to improve your sex life, but I don't believe that's the case.
Well, it depends on what your sex life can go in a different way, okay? I don't know what excites you, but then, if the thing has the front wheels off the ground and the back tires are burning off of it, if that's something that excites you, then your sex life's going to improve.
There you
Craig,
go.
Are you with me here?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, raise your hand, okay?
Okay.
He's into motorcycles.
Here's the deal. The chips do nothing but change parameters. And all we're doing is lying to the computer to add a little bit more timing and add a little bit more fuel. Yes, they're worth it. Yes, they're fun. And most guys they'll plug in their programmer and they'll take the maximum raped ape level 5 out of 1 through 5 and then they'll start backing it off. And because when you get the raped ape kind of number, then your fuel economy goes to hell. You smell like rotten eggs because your catalytic converter is overloaded, and there's all kinds of bad things that are going on. So you can talk to the guys that do diesels because they're going to know the answer to the gasoline answer as well. If you want, you can call my son Alan and ask him that. Your dad says you don't do gasoline programmers, but if you did, here's what I've got. Kind of vehicle I have, what would you suggest I look at? And I'm sure he'll talk to you for free.
All right, that'll be great. Yeah, that certainly narrows the field down. All right, appreciate that.
All righty. His name is Alan, and it's Salem Boys Auto, okay? Alan?
I'll do it.
Salem. Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you. Okay, Glenn, I'm going to get your question. That's about all I'm going to get, and then I'm going to hold over to the break on your answer, but go right ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I like free answers. And I like talking to people for free.
Okay.
Hey, I was curious if you can tell me a 10.7 compression ratio, Can that help me determine an octane rating on my fuel?
I mean, obviously, the answer to your question is get it down as low as you can in the tank and use regular and see how much rattling you're getting, and then go to a mid-grade and see how much rattling you're getting. And then if you get rattle all the way through regular, mid-grade, blended, we call it, or premium, then you've got too much timing in it, and you've got to back the timing out a little bit out, 2 or 3 degrees, and then start the process over again. But at 10,
I don't like that answer.
Okay. All right. That's okay. I without knowing what your timing is and without knowing what jets you've got in the carburetor and how much fuel you got and all your, if you've got an EGR valve on it and all that other kind of stuff, without knowing all that, I can't do anything other than make the very next...
I might have
You're hurting my feelings, you know that?
You need a hug.
You're a delicate flower. I might have overcomplicated a question. I've got a single cylinder 300cc motorcycle engine that I heard the dealer when I brought it home, he said use 91. I believe the manual says 87. I can't find it in my owner's manual. But that's the compression ratio of the single cylinder motorcycle.
Right, hold on. Does it have adjustable timing?
Yeah.
If it has adjustable timing, then I'll tell you how I do it. Craig, you chime in.
Yeah.
I would put premium in it. And then I would adjust the timing until she rattles and back off 2 or 3 degrees. And if it didn't drag the starter on a hot restart, boom,
I got it. Especially a single cylinder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how I would do it. Did I hit it?
Yeah. What year you're working on the bike?
It's brand new.
Oh, is it? Okay. Wow. Okay.
And I'm thinking the timing's not adjustable.
Right.
And I'm thinking that's not adjustable. And so at that particular point, I'd start with cheap gas and I'd move up until I didn't rattle. And then that's where you needed to be. But I got to run. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Craig and Vicki Bell with us from Bell Automotive in Scottsdale, Southeast. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and Vicki and Craig Bell are here from Bell Automotive. They're guests of mine, and our families have known one another for 40 years. I'm actually more Craig's dad's age, and Craig is my son Alan's age, so it's kind of a second generation, easy to do that. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. 602-508-0960. Nelson, you stay right there. I got a real quick thing. Craig, the one-cylinder motorcycle motor, we ask if it had adjustable timing.
Right.
What do you think about that?
With all the new technology, just the same as cars, they might not let you adjust it.
But sometimes if you drill out two rivets and you're able to move the, the contact plate, you can add or subtract a little timing to it. I think guys like you and I, if it was capable of modifying it, but there's the risk associated with that is you change it and then the motor blows up and you think it's under warranty and it's not now.
Yeah, because they've seen what you've done.
you've taken it into an area it's not supposed to be running at.
Right.
You have voided the warranty when you take those rivets out.
I know, but I'm just thinking, I didn't want to leave everybody with the idea that it was an impossible thing, because it's not an impossible thing for us old guys. We know how to make that happen. Right. But it could be that they have built this plate into something that where it doesn't have any adjustment on it, and it is just the timing.
I've run into that on several of my motorcycles. That there's a few things you can do to get around a certain couple things to get that a little bit more power, or a little bit more drivability.
But each time you get a new scooter or a new motorcycle, it gets increasingly difficult.
Yes.
Now, I'll give you a good example, and we'll talk about this real quick. If we were to dump the vacuum when the engine was running, then the computer's going to say, he's got his foot to the floor, turn on the injectors like fire hoses.
Yeah.
So if we could fake out the computer into believing that our foot was on the floor... then the computer's going to open the faucet up and give us a lot of fuel. Those are the kinds of things that they haven't been able to control us 100%. Right. They're getting better than they were, but they aren't there yet. Yeah. Nelson, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I recently purchased a 2004 for a Dodge Dually 5.9 automatic.
Okay.
I don't drive it every day, so my question is, when I engage the shift lever, it takes a little while for the torque converter to pick up the oil and for the vehicle to move. Is that of concern or?
Well, normally what we hear is if it sits for a long time, it
yes.
takes a few minutes to prime the converter, but okay. not on a daily basis. How many miles
no.
did this have on it?
It's got 150,000 miles on it.
Has the tranny ever been opened, do you think?
Oh, yeah. This guy that I bought the Carfax, the guy was meticulous on maintenance. It's
okay.
been very, okay. very well pampered. Yes.
All right. I'm gonna take this first because I'm gonna open the door knowing that you're gonna step through it anyway. I think a transmission sealer and conditioner, a can of sure. some kind of transmission additive would be appropriate, or a pint of brake fluid. And you're swinging your head, Greg. I'll tell you why I like brake fluid. Okay. It causes the rubber to slightly
oh, yeah, I like
swell.
It. And well, I'm thinking old days. That was a complete fine.
Yeah.
I just don't know how that affects all the new solenoids and electronics in the transmission.
Okay, but how many quarts are in the transmission
oh, yeah,
of today?
Quite a few, yeah.
And we're talking about a pint or
yeah,
half a
yeah,
pint.
Yeah,
you know what
so,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, I had to talk Craig into it. And so, and Vicky's shaking her head, Nelson. I'm just telling you that.
Yeah.
I think you could easily try some transmission additives.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
okay.
and but let me draw the line. If it happens every day, you'd use it and you drive it every day and it only happens first thing in the morning, then we're leaking fluid down and it's something, there's some O-ring and there's some connection inside that converter that's causing this problem. If you can fix it with an additive, God bless you.
Yeah.
If
okay.
not, I still don't think I would do anything. I think you can start it up, that 5.9, put it in drive. You can feel when it goes into
yeah.
drive and just drive it.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't be going in there looking to fix it.
No,
I wouldn't do
no,
that.
Like I said, it sits for a couple of weeks, because maybe in 3 weeks, I just don't drive it every day because it's not in my principal vehicle. So anyway, I just kind of my wits in here where to start. So, and I'll proceed kind of cautiously on this. And,
okay.
And
well, that's but the answer to the dilemma is you're letting it sit for a long time. That's going to create it in some other vehicles that don't have 150,000 miles. I mean, that we're going to leak the converter is going to lose fluid. That big tub's
yes.
not going to be full anymore, and it's going
right.
to take it won't take 10 or 15 seconds for us
right.
to pull that thing back together.
Yes.
I just don't think. I'm scared you're going to go out and somebody's going to give you some magic potion lotion, which was
no.
elephant urine from the 1920s out of Africa,
no.
and you're going to pay $450 a gallon for it, and it's not going to work. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
No, I've listened to you quite well on additives and things like that, so I'll cautiously approach it, okay?
Okay.
Thank you for the information.
Thank you, Nelson. And I have been hell on additives, but then
yeah.
on this show twice I've already said, let's try
additives. Well, I mean, you for the public, sometimes the additives are the old carnival guy that would show up
snake oil,
start mm-hmm. selling you stuff, and they touted it for everything and anything.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
you do it specifically for what it's supposed to be used for, it's not a bad first try.
No, and we didn't like synthetics. Your dad didn't like them, and neither did I, and neither did anybody else when they first came out because it had the consistency of water.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, that's all we'll use.
Yep.
Now, all of a sudden, we understand. Now, all of a sudden, it's the greatest thing since sliced cheese.
Yeah.
You're right? And so we're learning as we go along. But additives, I think you and I and a lot of other gray-haired guys have an idea that an additive is a helpful diagnostic tool. We're not trying to fix anything. It
yeah.
will help us understand what the repair is.
Yes.
And so you just go through that. I think I'm pinging like crazy because of heavy carbon buildup. Okay, fine. Let's use an additive to clean up the cylinder, mm-hmm. and let's see if you're right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So anyway, 602-508-0960. The phone numbers, the lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. As you can imagine, I have friends in the auto repair industry. And most people that know me can't imagine I have friends at all, but nevertheless, Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around since 1967. When it comes to having the skill level and the and the drive to find and fix something that nobody else could. Larry Harker's is the perfect example because they have senior guys that have gray hair that's been around the block, and they're not too proud to ask some of the younger little techie guys, but between them all, they can fix cars. But they can also do your oil changes and your cooling system flushes. They do both foreign and domestic cars and trucks and stuff like that. So 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you've got a car that on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock in the morning every single week the horn honks and no one can fix it, Larry Harker's can. Let me switch gears here and talk about Blackwell Automotive. I've known Tom since we were both 10 years old. I don't like him. I'd never liked his shop, but he is a good technician. So Blackwell Auto is at 40th Street and Greenway. He kind of takes care of that northeast area. We're very good friends. He's very good at what he does, but like most of the shop owners, like all of the shop owners on my list, if we're not the best ones for your car, we'll refer you to someone who isn't. We're not going to tell you we can fix everything except a crack of dawn and a broken heart when we really can't. So, but we do know somebody who has a Maserati background that can take care of your Maserati's problems. So, Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway up in Northeast Scottsdale. Jerry with a G, G-E-R-I. I have a Jerry, I have a Jerry with a J, and then I have Jeff with the J. So I'm pretty lucky, but Jerry with the G, you're up first.
Hey, Mark, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I have a 2014 Jeep Cherokee Latitude with 150,000 miles on it, and there are a couple of shops have told me I need new motor mounts for it to the tune of $1,400, $1,500. I guess there's three motor mounts, and I'm wondering if it's logical to do that repair or if I should just look to trade it.
Oh my! I'll buy it from you, hands out right now. I mean, that's
oh,
that,
you will.
That yeah. Trade in isn't a good idea. Well, okay, let me tell you this. What symptom do you have that someone has pointed to the motor mount?
Well, when I turn, I've got kind of a shimmy on it, and I feel like there's vibration inside of the cab than there has ever been.
Okay. All right. The vibration is going to be engine speed related. So if you say, Mark, I drive it at 38 miles an hour and I got a good vibration, and the minute I put it into neutral and take my foot off the throttle, the vibration is gone. That's motor mounts. If you accelerate hard from a traffic stop and then let go of the throttle quickly and there's a thump, that's a motor mount. If you have a vibration throughout the entire car when the motor's running and the car's not moving, that's a motor mount.
Okay.
And then it there in a worst case scenario, and I can't imagine, but I got to tell you, Vicky's pushing on me on this thing here. If you drive like a race car driver, her name is Jerry. She's a lady, okay? If you drive like a race car guy and you throttle up hard, really, really hard, and then you let go real fast, and there's a hell of a thump underneath the hood, that's a motor mount. Yes,
okay.
You should do all three at 150,000 miles. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we agree that yes, you do all three. Should you trade it in?
No.
Let me tell you, don't tell anybody this, okay? But I can replace the motor mounts every month for the rest of this car's life for the sales tax and license plate fees of your next car. Okay, so when you look at the dollars and cents of these three motor mounts versus buying something new and the wasted money on the tax and on the license plates.
And the insurance
and all that. But what do you have a shop that you like?
I've taken it to a couple. I've taken it to Blackwell.
Okay.
They, too, said $1,400, $1,500 for motor mounts, and I just thought, oh, my God, that's just too much to put into an old vehicle with a four-cylinder engine.
Okay, but wait a minute. I'm going to take the other side of that issue. You've been driving this car for 7 years, so it's cost you $1,400 for 7 years. That's $200 a year. That's okay. That's okay. And here's what you do. You go back to Blackwell's and tell Aaron or Tom that Mark is going to send you a 10% coupon off, or at least he promised he would. And, and that should bring a smile to their face. I don't know that I'm going to get you a 10% because most of us don't work off that kind of margin. but, I don't want you to be afraid. Now, in addition to that, there's little or no chance you're going to have any heartburn down the road unless you wait until those motor mounts get really, 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 really bad.
You don't want them to break.
Yeah. You don't want them to break. And,
yeah.
And so,
yeah, maybe but, I'll.
This is a once every 150,000 mile bill. That's pretty good. I can think of a lot of people, especially my grandsons, that are going to be able to wipe out those motor mounts in 100,000 miles by driving them aggressively. Yep. So I say fix them and they just bid them against one another. Okay.
Okay. Could your friends at Bell give me a better price?
Off the top of our heads, and I was thinking the same thing. I wonder what we would bid it at. But yes, if you called them, and you need the VIN number, right?
The VIN number.
Okay, and they can put numbers to three mounts installed with sales tax license plates or sales tax and environmental charges and all the other stuff. The answer is yes. Okay,
all right.
Thank you, Jerry.
I'm going to do that. Mark, you are awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am.
I think he's awesome, too.
It's my mother. She has my mother calling me. There's few people that think I'm really awesome. Jack the Ripper, remember? That's my middle name, is Jack the Ripper. Okay, real quick, we're going to go to Jerry. Jerry, good morning. And we have, this is Jerry, not Jeff.
With a J.
Okay, yes, with a J. Jerry, go ahead, sir.
Hi, this is Jerry.
Yes, sir.
I have a 40 Ford with a 350-inch Chevy 350. And the temperature gauge will go to 200, then it drops down to 160. Then I drive a little further, 200 to 160. It just seems like this thing bounces back and forth. It's driving me crazy.
Do you have a thermostat in it?
Tap the gauge.
I'm assuming it does.
Okay.
I didn't install the engine.
All right. Well, I'm kind of in time crunch, but let me just kind of touch base real quick. Does the radiator cap sit on the top of the radiator on your car?
On the side.
On the side? Okay, but you can open it in the morning and look down inside of it, yes?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so you're there, and you have your wife get in and start it up and bring the RPMs up to about 1,000 RPMs. The water's going to ripple, or it's going to flow. If it's flowing, it doesn't have a thermostat in it, and that would explain why you've got that wide variation of temperature. Okay, so it's the difference of vibrating, rippling, and flowing. So just open up the radiator cap, have her start it up, bring the RPMs up, and see if it's flowing. It should not be flowing because the thermostat's supposed to be cold. When it's cold, it's shut. Now, as far as the temperature is concerned, it doesn't bother me that you're running between 180 and 220. That motor should be north of 200. It should be in the 220 range because it'll vaporize the fuel a lot better, and we can't have the engine oil being running around at 180 degrees all the time because it's going to turn to peanut butter. So the hotter the run you run the motor, the closer to 220, even in the old ones, the better off you are. It likes it a whole lot better. So I got to run, Jerry. Thank you. And if you have any other questions, Jerry, mark@marksalem.com, and I'll give you first choice. I mean, I'll get your email and I'll get right back with you. Let me tell you real quick about automatic transmission exchange. Automatic transmission exchange has been around since 1968. Phil and Fred Flintstone were friends. They were friends. Phil knows more about transmissions, and here's the good news. As you know, and you'll agree with me, if you understand how the old ones work, you understand how the new ones work. All we're doing is the old ones, we used mechanical linkages and we used something to do with the throttle and we used vacuum to make things happen. With the new transmission, it's all electronic.
Yeah.
It's easy. We're still shifting it from first gear to second gear to third gear to fourth gear, fifth, overdrive, lockup. We're still doing that. Well, Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, he's the one that built the transmission for Barney Rubble's first car that had steel wheels on it. So he's a good guy. He's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around a long time. And if you're going to stop by and ask him to drive it, just call him first and ask him if you can make an appointment to have somebody. And you're not going to take one of their technicians for a ride for an hour. It's something that you have to be able to show them within a block or two. Okay? That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Jeff, you're up. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thank you for your courtesy and your knowledge. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
I have a 2012 ES 350 Lexus,
okay.
and I use I use the transmission. I live on a hill, and when I go downhill, I'll pull it down into third and use the transmission rather than the brakes.
Okay.
And sometimes it'll tack up to around 2,500 to 3,000. Since the wheels are driving the transmission instead of the engine driving the transmission, does that make a difference on lubrication of the transmission? And is it good or bad for the transmission for me to use it like that?
Absolutely, you can use it that way because they can't possibly guarantee that you're not going to work at Pike's Peak at the trinket store on top of Pike's Peak. So, no, there's absolutely nothing you should be concerned about doing what you're doing. You're manually taking over the shift pattern. You're using it as a brake or to slow down or whatever. But there is no concern at all. If I was going to buy your car and you told me that, I couldn't have cared less. I just wouldn't have cared. Now, if somebody wants to figure out if Jeff has overdone it, then you pull the pan and look for the metal.
Right. Yeah,
and
if we
find a handful of metal in the transmission pan, then we know that you've gone too far. But let me ask you this, Craig. When was the last time you saw an abnormal amount of metal in a transmission pan?
Yeah, not too not
years?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, absolutely years. Yeah. And then normally when they come in, they're coming in on a tow truck and you take the pan off and now we have a whole bunch of pieces.
Whole bunch of stuff.
But in your particular...
It was probably my car that he saw it.
Yeah, it was. That's what he was pointing at you. But as far as your 12 ES350 on your Lexus, don't worry about what you're worrying about right now. It doesn't make any difference. And I use my gears. I have a Dodge truck, and I'm hauling horse trailers. And when I start coming down from Mount Ord, I'm dropping that baby down into fourth, and I'm all the way down. And then sometimes I'll drop it down into third if it gets away from me and starts running too fast than I'm comfortable with. But I don't worry about that kind of stuff. So I think you're going to be okay. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. My email address is mark with a K at marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question and you want to send it to me in the email, please do, but leave me a phone number because a lot of times I don't want to have this give and take back and forth email stuff. I'd just as soon call you, and when I call you, I'll call you from a blocked line for obvious reasons. And if you don't answer block lines, then I'll say, hey, this is Mark Salem. I'm returning your call. I'll call back in about 5 minutes, and it'll be a blocked call. And so that you'll be ready. And then when you answer, you say, hello, and I say, this is Mark Salem. Don't hang up. And then at that particular point, hopefully, we're jiving there. So that's kind of the way it is. I had a guy the other day that called me about a Corvette. And he was just all wound up really tight about something that just doesn't need any attention at all. It was just one of those things that no one cares. And it had to do with the engine temperature vacillating on a regular basis. Right. But we were running from 200 to 230, but he couldn't explain why. And that bothered me more than anything else. But I could make it run 230 if I wanted it to. And I can make it run 190 when I wanted to. It's a matter of what's going on in that time frame. And is that explain why the temperature goes to 230? But 230 doesn't bother me. 240 doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
So, folks, at 260 is we're going to start turning the coolant to steam to a gas, and it's at that point where you're going to be in real trouble. But the 260 mark is in the red zone of your dash.
Right.
So stay away from the red zones. But when you go to three-quarter engine temperature, when you go to three-quarter transmission temperature, no one cares. No one cares. It's okay. And to be honest with you, I think I run my vehicles hotter than normal, and I'm happy to do that because I think the alternative is running them cold, and cold isn't good.
No.
And it's not good for the fluids. It's not good for the filters. It's not good for the combustion. It's not good for the engine temperature. None of that stuff. So Mark with a K, Mark at MarkSalem, Salem like the cigarette, .com, and I'll get back to you. Craig and Vicki, thank you very much from Bell Automotive, 87th Street. And it's like Pima and
Pima
101.
101.
Yeah. Pima and 101. Been around the block a few times. Craig's got gray hair, and Vicki doesn't, but... there's probably a reason for that. You know what I'm thinking? All righty. All righty, man. We'll see you next Saturday.